Studios to legendary DJ Marley Marl.
Alongside Collie Bond.
Right now you're checking out the Legendized Podcast. On this podcast, we go beyond the origin stories of hip-hop's greatest artists.
And producers and the classic records they made.
That's what's up. That's right, y'all. I go by the name of the legendary DJ Marley Marl. Right now you're checking out Legendized, man. What up, Collie Bond?
Another episode six.
Six. Wow. Six in the can?
Yes.
Wow.
They just keep getting better and better.
We're going to take a little flashback. You know, when we first started this series, we had Craig G in the studio.
Okay.
And it was pre-pandemic.
He would have been really our first guest.
Right.
Because he was supposed to jump off the season.
Okay.
And then the pandemic shutdown happened.
Yeah, shut us down. And we was talking some things. So I think since he was our beta tester, and he was supposed to be the first one before everything got crazy, we should bring that one back and check it out.
All right, so in a little while.
That's what I'm talking about. So what up, man, Collie Bun?
Hot topics, man. You've been keeping secrets, Marley.
What's going on? What
happened?
You've
been keeping secrets, Marley.
What happened?
You got this new adventure out called Marley Monsters? Is this what I'm hearing? I'm hearing this.
Explain it to me. What is it?
On the market, there is a new craze called Marley Monsters.
Okay.
It is paper towels and unpapered toilet paper, which means that it's cloth wound up like paper towels and toilet paper, but it's cloth and it's reusable. Marley Monsters, look it up.
All right, look it up, but I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I don't know the product.
It's reusable, recyclable, and green, Marley.
It's toilet paper?
It's toilet paper, but it's not paper. It's cloth, reusable cloth.
Let me tell you, that shit is not legit.
All right, let's just move on to our next hot topic, the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of new music that's dropping.
Yes, yes.
Researchers are saying that from what they've been getting from record labels and what they've been hearing on the digital platforms is that the pandemic has made music sad again.
You know, I could see that in a way because you look at the soul records out that's coming out.
Yes.
You know, they're more soulful.
Than ever.
They're more slower. They're more drabbier. They're more, you know,
self-reflective.
Yeah, and they're talking about, you know, like Leave the Door Open, and you see those records are really big. And, you know, it's like emotions. I could see emotion is back in the music. You know, before pandemic, a love song was like, bitch, get to my house and take off your shit. Turn around so I can hit. It was like straight up. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But now it's like, yo, now they're saying suggestive, lovely things. People fell back in love again with the pandemic.
Yes.
I mean, if you were stuck in your house with your spouse and it didn't work out, that meant that y'all wasn't really meant for each
other.
Exactly. But it took the pandemic to show you that shit.
Okay.
But a lot of people got closer.
And it has strengthened some relationships.
Right.
Yes, you got a better chance to really know
because,
each other.
Yeah, now, you know, to be straight honest, I ain't know a lot of people to the pandemic time. Where you had to spend some time with them, then you get to know them more.
Right.
Now the relationship is, you know, it's could be better.
Right. And they say that the songs now that are coming out that were made during the pandemic, artists are now sending their personal messages through songs that have been affected by the pandemic, you know, negative global news and experiences in relationships, whether it's bad or good, or the missing of somebody. So they're expressing this in song. And this is what we're about to hear with the, you know, an influx of all this type of music.
Well, to be honest, pre-pandemic, we would have heard, pull that thong over. Right? And it would have been a hit. Because it was a little creepy.
Yeah,
but now,
I'm
trying to be thoughtful now. Leave the door open. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, because pre-pandemic, it was getting out of hand that I won't let my daughters who don't live in America hear that bullshit.
Right, right.
That's how it was getting. And if a motherfucker was coming up to me talking about, oh, my daughter know every word of WAP, I was ready to slap the shit out of them. That's real talk.
So you're kind of looking forward to hearing more self-reflective music, more soulful music.
I think we grew up. We grew up because I don't think that other R&B is it anymore. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
It was very suggestive. It was like almost, I call that butt naked R&B.
Butt naked R&B. B-N-R&B?
Butt naked R&B.
And now we're getting back to the soul music.
Getting back to loving again.
Okay.
Let's love again. I feel like P. Diddy right now. Just with, you know, I feel like Brother Love right now.
Right.
Let's love again, y'all.
Yeah, let's be on some John Legend shit.
No. Let's not get that soupy.
Let's be more reflective like her. Her is doing it.
Yeah, big. Her. Right? There you
she's,
go.
She's so dope.
Her is that thing right now.
Yeah, and Giveon and people like that. Daniel Caesar.
Not pull your thong over.
There you go.
Oh, I see your thong.
More sad songs, more reflective songs, more soul.
That's
coming
what I'm saying.
Your
more
way.
Soul. That's what I'm saying. And soul is old, and soul is hitting. I mean, no matter what you could say about your boy. The Filipino boy that's singing all the black
Bruno
songs,
Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars.
You could talk all your shit about him all you want. That motherfucker's winning.
Yes, he is. And he's doing it with a most authentic sound.
Yeah. You know, I really thought Cardi B would turn his ass out, but she couldn't.
But then he hooked up with Anderson .Paak and got that funk.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I thought Cardi was going to turn him out. I thought I was gonna see him fucking in fucking videos licking lollipops and shit. I thought he was going there, but
yeah, man, Silk Sonic. You know, I'm looking forward to that joint.
Yeah,
the whole album, music is back.
Music is back. Love is back. Black
Soul
people
is back.
Black people are back. We're back.
Global soul. That's what I want to hear.
That's what it is.
Hot topics.
In this segment of the game, we're gonna find out who chopped you.
Hi-ya! What the?
Who chopped you?
Ding, 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 ding. Who chopped you?
Got a dope one today.
That's right, yo, Kali Bond, you started off, man. You let him know what it is.
Check this out, Lou Donaldson. It's Your Thing, produced by Francis Wolfe, 1969.
Now, back in the day, that was part of the package from Aaron Fuchs. He gave me a package of 45s for mixing a record. This was my pay for mixing
your
a record.
Your pay was a stack of 45s.
That's right, and this was in it. It goes like this.
You want to do? I can't tell you who chopped the two. Who chopped the two?
I'm gonna tell you who chopped the two.
Who chopped it?
In 1992, produced by your boy Diamond D.
Ooh, DITC.
Brand Nubians. Punk jump up to get beat down. Went like this.
One day when I was riding on the train, I seen these two kids talking about the Nubian rain had fallen.
Woo.
I didn't say nothing because these
kids... Yeah, fade that before you start cursing.
My brethren, Supercat, also used this in Ghetto Red Hot, the hip-hop remix, produced by your boy, Salam Remy.
Okay.
1992.
Well, that must have been...
Selector.
That must have been the day after I taught him how to use it. MPC 92. Let's go.
Now special dedication to all dogs of dogs. Dedicated to all top dogs living the crew. Man called Tony Kennedy, man called Robert, and while the fights are riding through. Curfew! Sometimes some back, some of them are rally back. We are road wide, and we not take back the track. Sometimes some back, some of them are rally back. But we are road wide, and we not take back the track.
Okay.
That was hot right there.
Wild Apache.
Was hot back in the day. I remember, okay, now there was a group called Real Live that ran across the House of Hits in 1996. This was produced by the brother K-Def that I discovered from Passaic, New Jersey.
Wow.
Who had a lot of joints back in the day.
How did he flip this one right
here? He flipped it something like this from the House of Hits, y'all. 1996.
mean, a lot of pain, a lot of sorrow, blood, sweat, tears.
I'm like a one-man crew, a one-man clique, iceberg slick, sick like horror flicks.
Yo, Lario was slick back then.
Yo, K-Def, wow, that was
he
a knock.
He did the chop job on that,
that
one.
That was a knock right there.
That was a knock right there.
Wow.
69.
Wow, you know it's been used up until 2014 in over 30 songs from Madonna to De La Soul.
What?
Yeah, now that's a sample. Now that's a sample.
So guess what? We got to legendize that.
No
guess
doubt.
What? The sample, Who Has Chopped You? On Lou Donaldson, It's Your Thing. Guess what?
You are now legendized.
Woo! Got that special guest with us. This cat right here, he been living in my building in Queensbridge in 4117 back in the day. He was a dancer on the block.
A break dancer?
Break dancer on the block. Pop locker. Let's get it right. Let's get it right. He's a pop locker. On the block, and then he took it all the way to the MCing category. Mr. Craig G, y'all.
What up, what up, what up, what up, Legendized Podcast, Marley Marl, Kali Marl. You already know how we do.
What up, man?
What up? I didn't even know I was a legend. I just thought I was a veteran, but I'll take it if somebody else say it.
You have some classics.
That's
you have
what
some
I'm
hip-hop
saying.
Classics under your belt.
Well, I'm glad to be in the building with my brothers.
So what's your thoughts on the current music that's out? Because I know you had an album out earlier, speaking with Craig G right now. You had an album out earlier with the artwork, and you was like kind of looking at the new jacks.
Yeah, the ramblings of an angry old man. You was like, on the album cover.
So... for anybody that knows me personally, I'm very sarcastic. And Ramblings of an Angry Old Man was like a joke because of the fact that I started so young and people think I'm so old.
Mm. Well, how young? How young did you
Well, my first joint came out, I was 12 going on 13.
So wow. Molly put you on the joint.
Wow.
At the age of 12.
Was that Transformer back
nah,
in the day?
Nah, it was Shout Rap.
Shout, wow.
Yeah,
how
Shout
did that,
Rap.
Wait, hold up. How did that come about? Like, how did y'all meet?
I could
at
tell.
12, well, at 12
I,
years
I knew
old.
Marley before. Marley lived in my building, 4117 Vernon Boulevard.
Queensbridge.
You know, and Queensbridge is like its own world.
Right.
And Marley was already starting to make moves. He was doing Sucker DJs with Dimples D. But before that, like, I was in a breakdance group. We were called Tan, Twice as Nice.
100%.
Wait. You were breakdancing?
I was pop locking. The story is quite interesting. Because Marley did this dope video for us or for It's Yours. We was
right.
in the park popping. So
still got the footage.
Wow.
When Shan says they used to do it out in the center, they had this talent show at Reese Center.
Mm.
And I was probably the worst guy in the group, in the breakdance group. And there was only like a certain amount of people that could be in the click, the rock live at the talent show. So they kicked me out the group.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to rhyme because my older brothers used to rhyme. You know, like
saying.
My brother Spanky T, Powerful, he used to MC. And like Queensbridge had its own world of hip hop. And I was already like addicted to it, like to the point where I would call like the Awesome Two. On a Tuesday night at 3
wow.
in the morning.
On the WHBI days.
You That's were right. not even supposed to touch a house phone.
That's real talk.
And I would whisper into the phone like, yo, this is Craig G. Can I hear Fresh by the Fresh 3 MCs? And Marley Marl lives in my building. And, you know.
F-R-E-S-H. Fresh, fresh, fresh. Yo, that's fresh.
So when they kicked me out the breakdance group, I was like, yo, I was... I'm a little stubborn, so I got upset and was like, you know what, man, I'm going to show them. So I decided to rhyme.
And the funny thing about it, too, his brother used to rhyme with us first before Craig G even got there.
Which brother?
His brother Powerful.
Whoa. Yeah. Spanky
right.
T.
Right.
That was his rap name.
And then so he took the mic.
Yeah.
And he started doing his thing. And then, you know, we did the earlier Shout Rap.
Yeah. Like with Shout Rap, I was already battling dudes in the hood. So I guess pop art. Lawrence and Dana Goodman, shout out to them. You know,
word.
They had the idea for the song, and Marley came and asked me to do it. And, you know.
So you handpicked Craig to do the shout
out? Yeah, he was, yeah. yeah, He was definitely one of the new upcoming rappers in the hood.
At 12?
I had a scheme.
But, you know.
So he was holding it down with older dudes?
100%.
I was battling everybody.
You got to think about it, too, because Tragedy was there, too. The Tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like two different packs.
Yeah.
It was Craig, and then it was the other ones that kept going to jail.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, like that hood casualties.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of hood casualties in Queens. Yeah. So what happened, so he did Shout Rap, and you know.
Shout Rap was
it was dope.
It was a hit, though. Remember, because the only reason it was a hit, because whenever they played the original version on urban stations, they would mix it with my version.
Right.
Yeah, it was a breakbeat.
It definitely got
heard. It was a breakbeat.
Because it was off a Shout.
Right. Yeah. I think I was in rotation for a hard minute too.
Yeah,
but
no doubt.
We didn't ask for permission, so no money came.
Yeah, that's true. They took all
so
that.
Who had to deal with Pop Art? You had to deal with Pop Art?
Yeah, I mean, those are my dudes, because I was already dealing with Roxanne Shanté.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know, through Pop Art. So we was already putting out records. So, you know, when ideas will pop up, Craig. Yo, rock on this. Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
And then but then they would go and let the editors from Philly chop it up.
Yeah. And they had to on that song, because I'll keep it 100. Like, Marley brought me to the studio. I just knew how to rhyme. I didn't know how to make a song. Shan had to help me write the first verse.
True.
Also,
helped you pen the Shout Rap.
He just helped me structure it, really, because I just went in there and rhymed for 6 minutes.
True. Straight out.
And Shan was just like, nah, you got to stop here. You got to stop here and, you know, make it three verses.
100%. Now, where were you recording this at?
In my apartment in Queensbridge. That's where we made Eric Beast president.
Yeah.
That's where we made Nobody Beats the Biz.
Nobody Beats the Biz.
Nobody Beats the Biz.
Where we made the
all of these joints were made in your apartment in QB.
Can I tell my Eric B. as president story? I used to hang out just to watch, you know, people work, and Rakim showed up and they did Eric B. as president. Marley wasn't even interested. He left the room and had Shan engineer it. That's why, like, on the original pressings, it has Shan as the engineer. Yeah. And I remember Rakim doing the verses and like stopping like every four bars, and I was like, this is like the worst song I've ever heard in my entire life. And then
this is like, Eric B. as president.
Yeah, but the turnaround was so crazy. So like 2 weeks later, Marley plays it on Rap Attack.
No doubt.
And I was like, this can't possibly be the same song that I heard when he was recording. It was like the greatest thing I ever heard.
Right.
So, you know,
but the thing too, when Rakim first came around us, we was already going faster, but he came and like slowed the pace down.
Yeah,
we was already going faster.
Yeah, my swing beat.
Bring one rapper, bring a whole fleet, because I could be standing by my swing beat.
Right, you know, so we's up in the tempos already. So he's like, "Yo, I want to do my melody, boom, pa, boom, boom, pa."
Yeah,
I'm like, "What? Yo, Shan, record this dude, man."
Yeah,
because
feeling him at the time, or you wasn't feeling that particular joint.
I wasn't feeling the tempo.
Yeah,
he wasn't feeling the tempo. Rap, he didn't have that same energy that you wanted.
Everything else that I was doing,
and then the way he was laying the verses, and that doesn't really have nothing to do with you being an MC. Like that could have been one of his first few times in the studio. I don't know, because I was a kid, but the way he kept stopping, like I come from the school of when you're in the park, you just rap and don't
stop. Right, you don't even count bars.
Yeah, I still don't count bars. So, you know.
It was definitely something different for us at that time.
Yeah, but when I heard the after effect, I was like, jeez.
Yeah.
Now, what happened with Dropping Science?
Okay. Dropping Science. I was doing this album, In Control. We did Dropping Science with a James Brown beat. The original Dropping Science, which was real dope.
Craig G and Marley Marl, we formed the ultimate alliance. No sucker can deal when I'm dropping science. I'm dropping science. I'm dropping science.
Yeah. Is that out there?
Yeah, it's on the album.
The original?
Yeah. And on the single.
Right.
I'll say it at the end because it was a compromise.
Right, and so, you know, it was the James Brown beat, which was dope, and, you know, it did really well for the album. But then I had remixed it.
Yeah. This is one of
those Molly things where after you leave,
this was in a story. I used to come after school to his crib and just work on stuff, like, you know. And we did Driving Science, and it was the boom, 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 beep, 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 beep. And it was so sick. And I remember like playing it for the whole block, going crazy. And then like a week later, coming there after school, and he's like, "Yo, I gotta let you hear something."
Remix.
I got the remix before
he put it on. He put it on, and my initial thought was, "I hated it."
Hated that shit.
I hated it. Hold on, Yeah, I hated it. I hated it.
Did you like the get?
Nothing. The get was in the original.
Right.
Yeah, but just the beat, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
He fucked it up.
And
I was the compromise.
I was wrong, because on the single. Remember, I rhymed over the bim, 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 and then the hook was the James Brown shit.
Right.
But I was wrong. I'll admit it right now. Listen.
Did you ever tell him you couldn't stand it?
Yeah.
Right there. He's like, I'm an Aries, man.
I'm not going to hold my tongue.
I don't know about that one, cuz.
I'm
going
to hold my tongue. Like, yeah.
I was like, what?
Okay. I was like, nah,
let the public decide.
Yeah.
As Molly does.
You already know what it is.
Which is a classic.
Me and Molly Moore, we're going one-on-one. For any sucker rapper that chooses to come. And for me, Craig G, a.k.a. the Kingpin. I drop science, can't you tell I'm singing? They hate how I turn my mic cord to a whip. Suckers just have to flip, cause I'm so hip. Craig G and Molly Moore, we form the ultimate alliance. No sucker can deal when I'm dropping science. I'm dropping science. I'm dropping science.
Now when it dropped.
Yeah, when it dropped.
Did you ever tell him I told you so?
Woo. Nah, you know.
He didn't have to tell me.
Nah.
He didn't have to tell me.
That was definitely a favorite.
That's why immediately I was wrong. He didn't have to tell me at all.
How did life change after that drop?
Oh. You know what? That my life didn't change. When the Symphony video dropped, my life changed.
Woo. I remember a conversation.
Yeah.
With
We had fun doing that video. It was the Western style.
Yeah.
We went to some abandoned Western city.
It was freezing.
Yeah, it was freezing.
So let's talk about that. It went from Dropping Science, and what happened in between Dropping Science and Symphony?
Well,
yeah, you know, to be honest, as a being a producer and working with Cold Chillin', and you know, let me just say this straight up. I never saw one royalty check from any Cold Chillin' record in my life, ever.
Say that again?
I never saw one royalty check from Cold Chillin' Records, ever.
Yeah.
You mean the whole catalog or
catalog?
The whole catalog. And what I was trying to do, he knew it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, don't really fuck with them, Craig.
Yeah.
Yo, tragedy. Don't fuck with them.
And fortunately, I was underage anyway.
Right.
So I couldn't really rock with them. But, you know, I wasn't signed to Cold Chillin'.
Right, because you were on Atlantic. Right.
Yeah, I didn't have
to Atlantic because I didn't want them to even be involved. Yeah. I was like, nah.
So that was your move to take them over. Though.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. It was like the week before Christmas. Marley knocked on my door and was like, "Yo, you want 30 G's?" I was like, "Yeah."
And how old were you at this point?
17.
All right.
Yeah.
I remember you got some apartment.
I remember I had the nice apartment. I lived there for like 5 years. I had the nice little apartment over by
is that when you had the Blazer?
Oh yeah. I had
living there left
rack. I was living there left rack. I was trying 100%. To be 100%. Trying to be a grown man at 17. I wanted my own crib. I wanted women to be over there. I was 100%.
So was after Dropping Signs that y'all started working on the album?
Yeah.
And then came Molly's in Control.
Well, we was always doing stuff.
We was always doing stuff.
But we knew it wasn't gonna go on Cold Chillin'.
Yeah, we knew that.
And that's why even Dropping Signs.
Yeah, but Dropping Signs
itself,
was on featuring Cold Chillin', Craig G. Right?
Yeah, but it says feature. Right. I was a featured artist because they couldn't sign me anyway.
Right.
Like when I signed to Atlantic, I had to go to court.
Yeah, they had to go
and tell them that I was going to college the next year
100%.
Just to get half of my advance up front.
Oh,
because I was underage.
100%. And you gotta think too. This is like the early part of rap before people even had any idea or aspirations
of where it was going. Yeah, the big deals weren't coming yet.
Yeah.
This is like you don't even know where it's going.
Yeah, you don't know.
To be honest, my whole rap career in them times, I wasn't thinking about the future of rap because we was always battling everybody. We was always fighting.
We just wanted to make the hottest joints.
We just wanted to be the hottest motherfuckers and make the hottest records possible.
Like I do verse jobs for dudes now, and they be like, "Yo, we gonna take over the game," and I'll be like, "Yo, B, let's just try to make something dope and let everything." All of the greatest classic records were made when we had no idea what they were.
100%.
Right.
We
like Molly said that.
100.
We were those just joints that make, came out of the Astoria. Yeah, like, but it came from the bridge.
I came from Queensbridge. Make the music with your mouth, biz.
Yeah.
The bridge.
The bridge.
Eric B's president.
Nobody beats the biz.
Roxanne Shantae's Roxanne's Revenge.
Roxanne's Revenge.
Oh, the one that started the whole, the bridge, whole Roxanne.
Beat Biter.
All his earlier joints.
Oh, Shan's Beat Biter.
Yeah, Shan's Beat
Biter. Stephanie Mills remix with Shan.
100%.
So, yeah.
All of those were made in the bridge.
Queensbridge.
Was that on a 4-track? 8-track?
It was on a 4-track.
Real to real.
I brag about that to this day. Like, you don't understand what dudes did with a 4-track.
Because we had to be dope because there was no tracks to be wet.
You had to have there was no ad-lib tracks.
No tracks to be wet.
You had one joint to do your verses.
Word up. And you know, and you had to be dope.
And Molly
and my speaker was in the window too. So if people wasn't dancing, walking by, it was whack.
Now on a production side, I've heard you say in interviews that a lot of those joints the drum sounds of the week were made on the drum sounds of the week.
Yeah, because my sampler, you know, we didn't have floppy disk to hold the sound, so I would load that kick and snare in each sampler and have it there for the week. So whatever sessions were coming, like Eric B's President, Nobody Beats the Biz, all of that was rent.
I left some off the list.
Yeah.
Spoonie G, Take It Off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Spoonie That's G, my style.
That's true.
Uptown's kicking it.
That's true, yeah. Uptown's kicking it. Yeah. The history won't be known that me and Heavy D was making
classics.
We was making New Jack Swing records.
Overweight Lovers in the House.
Before Teddy Riley got to Uptown.
Yeah. And now speaking of New Jack, right? So we did the first album.
Right.
Me personally, I felt like we rushed it. And the way the deal came about was I did a hip house song called Turn This House Into a Home.
Ooh, yep.
And Marley had a house mix on BLS in the afternoon.
Yep.
And the A&R of Atlantic was
Merlin Bob,
who was a house music DJ.
Right, right. Over at BLS.
I'll keep it 100. Like, I probably got signed off the strength of a house song.
Turn this house to a home. Turn this house to a home.
Yo, Craig, they want to hold you back. From here, New York to Chicago. First it was your goal, now it is my goal.
So we kind of just curtailed to what we thought they would want. And I didn't like the first album, Kingpin. There was some joints on there, wasn't really like... And to be honest with you, I'll say it. It was probably one of the worst Juice Crew debuts ever. But it didn't really deter me because we went right back to work. And the second album, Salaam Remy, the first production he might have ever gotten.
Yeah.
He helped out, and Marley, like, we were focused, like, super focused.
But did the success 100%. Of the other Juice Crew members ever help?
Well, I always say this. We were in new territory. As much as I used to blame the label back then, they didn't know what they were doing. Like, Cold Chillin' already had their formula.
Right.
So I would always say maybe I sacrificed fame to not sign with Cold Chillin', but I wound up with more money.
Okay.
100%.
So I'd say that.
And to be honest, if you look at the timing of everything, I was with the Juice Crew early, and I made all those records.
Around what years was that, like?
I would say from 86, 7, and 8.
Which we call the golden era.
That's the kind of like the golden era of hip-hop. Yeah. But once I got them not to sign with Cold Chillin', I broke out.
Yeah.
I went to Uptown.
Yeah.
You broke out from Cold Chillin'.
Juice Crew. The whole everything. I was like, yo.
The Juice Crew was kind of disbanded at that point.
That's when I came around this.
Because came with the Rush.
Right, right.
Came with the Rush management.
Yes,
Ace was already out the door.
I broke out. I was like, yo.
And Marley,
let me go to Uptown. And, you know, let's create something over here.
That's why there's like this records to Shan that I made.
Yeah, because everybody was like just out. Yeah.
I love Shan to death, but like at one point I had an interview and I said something about how the Juice Crew was done and he had made a comment and me and Marley, I was at Marley crib when I read it. we made two joints.
Oh, I know. Like, yeah, I know how that is. We can do something right now.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, look, man, we was kids.
True.
It's all, you know, it's okay, all so what it is.
Down that stretch, then came In Control.
Oh, yeah.
That was in the same stretch.
You know what's so funny? Huh? Because at that point,
that was kind of at the end of the
out.
That was kind of at the
and
end.
And I wasn't working with Magic anymore.
Right, exactly.
Because I was doing the daytime show because you had your thing popping from my daytime mix. So BLS comes to me, we're not renewing Mr. Magic's contract. I was
right.
like, what?
Right.
Rest in peace, Mr. Right. Magic. Rest Incredible peace, run, but it was his time at that point. Yeah. It was his time. The thing was changing at that point.
Right. And so what happened, they came to me, they said, yo, we're not redoing this contract. We want you to do the rap show. I was like, yo, I never even talked on the radio.
Yeah.
So they was like, no, we want you to do it. And my album was about to come out.
Yeah.
And which it was already titled In Control before they asked you about the radio show?
The album was titled In Control before the radio show. So I just tied it in. I was like, yo, let me make it called In Control so it could, you know, coincide. But we took over and, you know.
One of the greatest educations I've ever had.
I mean, phenomenal.
Because I answered the phones at the Rap Attack.
Right.
And before my album.
With Magic.
Yeah, but before my album came out and I started getting busy, I started with Marley too. And I would come in early and listen to every record that came 100%. In the mail.
So before
in the AM room, and I found YZ and Controller Things, and that was like our theme song for a quick minute.
Yep.
And let me expand as I take command. I'm the Controller Things. Legendize.
This is the story of how a film gets made. Starring Josh Rubin.
It's his first feature.
You Were the Worst's Aya Cash.
Can we not do this right now?
And SNL's Chris Redd.
He's not doing it for a paycheck.
Okay, I'll see y'all.
Join us for the making of Scare Me, a horror comedy from the brilliant mind of Josh Rubin.
This year you're gonna make a movie no matter what.
Tear down the fourth wall of filmmaking with our crack team of investigators.
Don't you come at me and try to get me to spill some stuff.
This is Make Cool Shit, hosted by Aaron Hieffitz.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Season one, make a movie.
3, 2, 1.
Everywhere you enjoy podcasts.
So I guess I'm gonna learn the film business.
Legendize. So before the In Control radio show on WBLS, the In Control album was already done.
It was in the making.
It was in the making. It was probably like 5 or 6.
Was the symphony done yet?
No.
Okay.
Symphony was not done yet.
Talk about the symphony.
Now, symphony, you see the back of the album cover. You know, you see us in front of the Learjet, which was my ex-wife's idea.
Hot as hell that day.
She's like, yo, y'all should go in front of a Learjet. Actually, she was styling for Elle.
Yeah.
She's like a stylist for Elle. You know, she said, we did a photo shoot the other day at the airport in front of a Learjet. It looked really good. I think the Juice Crew looked good in front of a Learjet. Like, y'all just came back from somewhere.
As long as
rappers did it yet.
What you got to understand how ahead of time Marley was, he had the rollie on the cover with the Gucci bracelet around it on the end. Like, the stuff that rappers covet now, I didn't know what a Rolex was, but Marley had the joint on already. He was chilling, but we did the song right after the photo shoot.
Yeah, we went right there. And there's a lot of controversy about why Shan is not on there. Because, you know, Shan was supposed to be on there.
Wasn't it? Whose idea was it?
You know, to be honest, we was going to recreate a song that Big Daddy Kane and Kool G Rap made. They rhymed off a roar back and forth. So I wanted something like that.
Me and Ace wasn't even supposed to be on it.
Right. They just came to check it out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and Shan was supposed to be on it. I think they was going to put Shan on it. So Shan, meet us there. So Shan's like, all right, whatever. So Shan,
it was just supposed to be G-Rap.
And Kane.
And Kane.
And Shan.
And Shan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they was coming to see it.
Like, me and Ace started hanging out a lot during that time. Ace had just graduated college.
And he had the car, too.
Yeah, Ace had just graduated college. University
of Rhode
Island.
Because you
were living
in the state at this time.
No, it was still Astoria.
You were still in Astoria?
Yeah.
Astoria.
So, but the airport was way in Long Island.
Right.
And Ace had just graduated college. He had a Hyundai Excel. And me and Ace came together. So after we did the shoot, I was like, yo, Ace, yo, let's go to the studio. Marley doing his joint or whatever. And that's how me and Ace showed up. 100%. But we weren't even supposed to be on the song.
Word.
All right, so you got to the studio.
So everybody's sitting there, don't want to go first or who last. I don't care who first or who last. Y'all just better rock this because
honestly,
nobody wanted to go.
I was under pressure. I wanted to write.
Right.
I didn't want to just jump in. I was like writing. I was like,
right,
nah,
so
I'm not ready.
Let's talk from a production point of view. You had the beat already set for what you wanted?
Yeah, I had the beat set, Champagne from WBLS slipped me that beat.
The sample?
Yeah. She used to do the Quiet Storm on WBLS. And she had access to Hal Jackson's library.
Oh my
that
God.
Came from Hal Jackson's library.
Yeah.
Just to let you know how pristine classic. It was. So she gave me that, and I went home, looped it up, and I had the beat for them, but nobody wanted to go. So I was like, all right, Master Ace, you just go on there until Shan get here.
Yeah.
Just
to kill time.
Kill some time on the joint.
Yeah.
Get some, you know, so he got on. Listen closely. But and everybody's like, yo, hold
Ace,
up. Hold
Ace
up.
Killed it, yeah.
He killed it.
He killed it.
Listen closely, so your attention's undivided. Many in the past have tried to do what I did. Just the way I came off then, I'm gonna come off stronger and longer, even with the trouble.
Then he's like, oh shit. Yeah.
So hold up.
Yeah,
you
I went
started
to
writing
the,
after I, Ace was in the
no,
booth?
No, I already started, and when Ace did his verse, I rewrote a whole nother verse. I was like, nah, B.
Okay.
100%. Nah, okay. B.
Yeah.
So I did my little verse, and you know, they kind of knew me. They didn't really know Ace.
Right.
So when they right. did it, they was like, okay, Craig, you good.
Was Ace underrated? I mean, like, underestimated?
Oh, yeah, because yeah. they was calling them glasses. Because
Ace
yeah.
had was kinda glasses.
Like, yeah, they was like kind of,
you know what it was,
on
though?
The, on the load.
I will
not
say
even
that.
Trying to be on a record with him.
Yeah, I will say that Ace was like more J. Cole. Like, right. Ace, like, all his shit had meaning because
right,
he
conscious.
Was a college educated right. dude. And
yeah.
even Letter to the Better and Simon
favorite,
Says was like
favorite.
Was like really deep thought out shit.
100%.
And during that time, it was like, I rhyme better than you. That was it.
Right.
So we fucked with Ace, but we didn't really. I did because I hung out with him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I just hung out with him
so
all the time.
So after Ace
yeah.
came on, you just knew that you were going to blaze it.
I tried to.
You said, ain't that something? The Craig, I heard you in that jam and it's pumping. I apologize. Oh, yeah, and can I have your autograph for me and my grandma? That's how I'm living. On surprise mode. Don't even sleep. Try not to keep your eyes closed. Because if you do.
How many takes, Molly?
First take.
Yeah, no.
Nah. About the first take. Everybody was first take that.
Everyone
day.
Was first take?
Everybody yeah. was first
well,
take.
Well, no, G-Rap was two takes, and there's a whole other story
oh, yeah,
behind
G-Rap,
that.
I want to get to that, because
yeah, yeah.
I know the story
yeah,
behind
G-Rap,
that, but that's,
I had to, like,
that's what we have to talk
chop
about,
him
too.
Down, because he round all the way to the beat went off.
So shout out the BET Unsung, but whoever the dude they was interviewing, he has it absolutely, I'm going to curse too, fucking wrong.
What
Kane did not write any of our lyrics.
Okay.
He said that on Kane's Unsung.
Got you.
Kane wrote the next up, I believe it's me, get on the mic for the symphony part.
Right,
because that's
he
what
actually
he wrote.
Said that on the other song.
Yes.
That when they was rhyming together, the first
yeah.
beat.
Yeah.
He said that
on the
in
raw
his rhyme.
Joint.
Yeah. Oh,
all right.
And then Kane broke out because Kane was like hot. He had a show, he had to be out.
He did his verse.
He didn't even do his verse.
Oh.
Kane didn't record that. He recorded after, didn't he?
I think it was.
Yeah, Kane broke
but
out.
But he was there.
He was there for
but
a minute,
G-Rap
chilling out.
And rhymed all the way to the end.
Yeah, G-Rap rhymed till we were 16-inch then.
Yeah.
16-track. And Kane rhymed till the quarter-inch, yeah, the quarter-inch reel rolled off the joint.
Rolled right off.
Yeah.
So after Craig's verse came G-Rap's verse, and he just spit from there
yeah,
to the end.
To the end,
right.
Yeah.
And you had to cut him off.
Right, we absolutely. Had to redo it and fix it and make room
yeah.
for Kane. And you know, that was the symphony.
When I hand you the mic, I hand Big Daddy King, Master Ace, Craig G, and my main man, Cool G. Hey, they call it up. I ain't gonna give y'all no microphone no more because y'all tear it up when y'all get it. I said to do a little something to the beats go.
Legendize.
The video, you know, the video, we was upstate. And that was crazy too.
Whose idea yeah. was it to wear that big ass sombrero?
Mine. I was yeah. being an asshole.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I wanted
to. Trying to stay warm. It was cold. Like
and not
the
just
fuck
that. I am. My pops was an Indian.
Yeah,
Sonny. So I wasn't really with the cowboy thing. So I wanted to do the gringo, because the gringo was always trouble.
Right.
In
right,
all
right.
the old westerns, he had a sombrero on. It was leaned over, and if you approached him wrong, he might shoot you. Like, I wanted to do that. I didn't want to do the Western thing. So I'm glad I did it because it stands out the most.
That's 100.
Yeah.
And that's, I remember one time I was at Marley's crib and you were like, yo, my life changed. I got on the train. Everyone saw the video. So and how did life change?
I am an introvert.
Drop?
I don't like people.
Word.
I really don't. Like,
facts.
It's nothing against people. So imagine being in like the 10th grade and your video is on Video Music Box. And Video Music Box is like in New York City, at least, if they play your video, you can't go anywhere. And being an introvert, looking around and be like, why is this dude staring at me, not realizing he might have saw the video? Like, it changed, like, emphatically. But it also changed because between Dropping Science and the Symphony, it was a lot of shows. And as a 16, 17-year-old kid, I was making some bread, and I was happy.
You ever had to babysit him?
Nah, he was always on time. I mean, Craig was, like, one of the more sensible people on the block. That's probably why he got a lot of work with me.
Yeah, I don't...
You know what I'm saying? I didn't go out a lot. He didn't go out a lot.
Yeah.
So we kind of connected that way. So I was like, I wasn't really working with the loud mouths and all of that.
Right, I was raised in the studio by this dude. So I would rather do that than go to some party. I just did a song on this new project where I was talking about it, how I've just been, I was feeding my creativity. It was keeping me out of trouble.
Right. So basically, after the symphony life, and that showed you a whole new life, tell me about how you got approached to do the 8 Mile, writing the freestyles for Eminem's 8 Mile movie. So you
moved
on.
It's a crazy story because between after the second album was dropped in like 91, which was Now That's More Like It, still one of my favorite albums. We had the dope New Jack Swing joints before Teddy. You and Not the One was a number one rap single.
100%.
I said that's why I'm driving and you're high stepping, hottie. So next time you even think of trying to play post, you can stand behind my ride and inhale the smoke. Because you know you're not in. You take your pride, but you're not one bit. That's right, girl, they say you're not in. But when the mama's biggest.
And the label still didn't really know what they were doing. And I took it really bad. Like, I really did. Because I'm a kid. You know, I'm 17 and I'm like, why is this not working out the way I wanted it to? And I was, like, being an asshole to everybody. I took it way too personally. But after that, I was working on music, but I was disgusted by the business. But I still had money left because I was always sensible with my money. Like, I never really went out and bought, like, an ostrich or something like that. I wasn't really doing none of that. I helped my mother get a house. You understand what I'm saying? So between then and there, you know, I'm low, but everybody knows me as a freestyle artist. Mm. And one day at this new music seminar in 94,
wow,
Supernatural, shout out to him, there was a lot of talk about us battling. And the new music seminar was like the biggest thing in New York at the time. Like, this is the place where Ice Cube fought with Above the Law and all that.
Right.
He was hosting the Lyricist Lounge. Shout out to Danny, Anthony. And they asked him what's up with the battle. To this day, he thinks that I was involved in it. Never. I was just there because it was like the event to be at in New York. He said it recently. He did like a podcast with Talib. He was like, he let his ego get the best of him and he called me out. And I grew up in Queensbridge where you couldn't walk to the store without having to have a snap session, which is where you make fun of people, moms and whatever.
100%.
And that's one of the core things of battling.
Yeah.
You could be the greatest MC ever, but if you don't have personality, you're not going to be a battler.
And if you're not going to say something funny about the other person, you're not going to get that reaction.
Yeah.
And at that time, this nigga was real
funny. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like a comic relief on this nigga.
So I crushed him. Again, shout out to Supernat. And, like, I started being known as a battle MC. And I found out, yo, there's another lane because the underground hip-hop had just started.
Mm-hmm.
That's when y'all started Future Flavors. And it was like a whole nother lane.
Pirate Radio.
Yeah. It was like a Zephyr with Sway and Tech in them.
Oh,
Yeah, like a whole nother lane of hip-hop started.
Definitely.
And
true.
I just decided one day, look, man, I never became a superstar. But you know what? I got people that still rock with me. I'm just going to do music and put it out. And, you know, I'm known as this battle MC. I'm going up to Marley Show freestyling. And so I get invited to the Rap Olympics in California. Shout out to Wendy Day Rap Coalition. And there's a battle. And I'm judging it. AC Alone from Freestyle Fellowship. Somebody from Loud Records. And I meet Eminem and Paul Rosenberg. So I meet them. M gives me his infinite tape before it even comes out. I'm like, yo, this dude is nice, kid. So the battle happens, and he whips this dude's ass, this dude named Otherwise. But being that AC alone was down with Otherwise, he gave him the nod. And me and AC alone had like an argument right at the thing. Like, yo, come on, man. He ain't
winning. Wow.
And M peeped that. But the story gets deeper. So 2 years later, I have a show in Detroit. The show is canceled while we're there. Hey, it's part of being an artist. I got the deposit, right, so I didn't lose any money. So I meet these dudes. They got a studio. I've been doing this since the 90s. Yo, we give you $1,000 if you come do a verse for us. Let's go. So we go to this gas station, and I'm going to get Phillies to smoke, of course. And there's like a factory kind of place behind it, and the door opens, and you hear hip-hop. Now, I'm in Detroit, but I'm from the hood. I'm from Queensbridge. I hear hip-hop. Yo, let's go in there. The dudes are like, nah. I'm like, yo, let's go in there.
Right.
We go in there, and it's the Shelter, the place from 8 Mile.
But they were just battling.
And me and Proof battled. I was high and drunk. I can't even say who won. We went back round and round like 10 times that I battled every other rapper in the building. And me and Proof became really cool. Rest in peace to my man Proof. Like, we became really cool. And when they were doing the movie, Paul Rosenberg, who was with M and Callie, gave me the CD. He was like, yo, we need somebody to coach the actors and write the lyrics for them, you know, when they doing the battles against M. And I was like, I'm down.
Wow.
I'm down. Incredible. They gave me 40 G's.
I hate to do this. I would love for this shit to last, so I'll take pictures of my rear end so you won't forget my ass. And all's well that ends okay, so I'll end this shit with a fuck you, but have a nice day.
And you could say whatever you want about Eminem, but B, he's one of the nicest MCs you could possibly imagine. And for him to seek me out, like when they first hit me, I was like, so y'all want me to do it? He's like, you're the only man for the job. Wow. I was like, wow.
Mm.
I appreciate the hell out of that because it kind of like made me attached to something that was really relevant that could never be taken away from me.
100%.
Legendized.
So who you like now? What artist you like that's out right now?
I like
give me
the...
Like, give me like at least just two.
I
just
like
two.
The obvious people. Griselda.
Right.
They keeping it alive. I'm a big fan of Joey Badass.
Mm.
You know, I like J. Cole. I like Kendrick. I like dudes that could easily ride a wave and talk about nonsense, but make the conscious decision to talk about something else. Because for a lot of artists, that's career suicide.
That's real.
And they became successful by doing it.
Mm.
So you've been writing, and Craig says it's been self-therapy. What do you do, Marley, for self-therapy? Especially from a producing point of view, musically.
Musically, I listen to classic rock, bro.
That's what I do.
People don't know that.
People may not know about me.
What's your favorite? Now, I know, but what's your favorite classic rock album of all time?
Oh, it got to be Queen. I'm a Queen fan. Mm-hmm. I go to Freddie Mercury house all the time.
Queen.
You know, every time I go to London, I make sure I stop by Freddie Mercury's place where he lived, you know, lay some flowers or whatever. Go stand out there with the people. But
right.
Anything classic rock, to be honest, my favorite radio station on XM is The Bridge.
Oh,
it's the classic rock station.
Yes, the classic rock,
it's the only station I really listen to.
How funny. It's The Bridge.
I know, that's really funny.
But you don't just like, for self-therapy, like, mm-hmm. you don't just like make beats or something for self-therapy?
Self-therapy for me is going back to a time before the bullshit. If you know what I mean, you know, a lot. I've seen
appreciating
a lot of
the simple shit,
right?
Yeah, so appreciating the simple shit
before everything got hectic. And you know, I always think about when I used to go upstate with my Fresh Air Fun family, learn how to ski, learn how to swim, learn how to listen to classic rock because that's what they was listening to in those days.
Right.
And those songs, certain songs, bring me back to a
this
kid.
Is why we're kindred spirits because that's how it happened for me. Because I went to Fresh Air Fun. I used to stay in Arcadia, New York.
Mm.
Which was near Buffalo.
Which is nothing like The Bridge.
Well, they had a farm.
Yeah, he was on a farm, too. I was on a farm family,
too. Right,
there was no black stations.
Yeah.
So during this time, this is when I fell in love with, like, the Police.
All day.
And Culture Club and, like, especially Europe in the early 80s, they were doing black music.
100%.
Though they were white people.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Like, it was so much soul. You know me, Hall & Oates. I went to see Hall & Oates and Tears for Fears 3 years ago.
I seen Marley rock out on a 7-hour flight to solely to the soundtrack.
How many
Saturday
times
Night
are
Fever.
We in the car?
Solely Saturday Night Fever.
How many times we in the car and I'll be like, yo, put on CBS 101.
But I was like, no, what you listen to? What you banging so hard?
Yeah, because that's therapeutic.
It was like BG.
If you're a fan of music, all right, let me just say this. If you're a hip-hop fan and you don't respect other genres of music, you're not going to be a great hip-hop artist because there are no genres. It's just good music and shit music.
I feel the
that's
same.
It. 100%.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. That's I definitely it. Listen to my Rolling Stones. And I'll call it therapeutic because it takes you back to a time when, you know, before everything started. So, you know, that brings your heart somewhere.
And,
so
besides, and the lyrics was honest. Yeah.
So besides
honest.
A check, what gets you going back into the studio? I mean, you have one right at the crib. So right. What gets you going back in there to turn the equipment back on and do something?
Technology. I'm a technology head. You know, I'm into everything that's new.
We used to make
out.
Your own shit.
Right, of course.
I mean, when you was in the bridge, you was making your... And that's how this man had created sampling.
You have to
just
think about
experimenting
it.
Shit with so technology.
We're experimenting back in the day. I was an intern at Unique Recording, which was like way ahead of everybody technologically. And, you know, it seems easy when you think about it right now. Oh, I sampled the snare, the kick, the hi-hat, and separated it. It sounds all easy because right now you go get a computer... And everything's already there for you.
They already separate.
This was splicing tape days.
This was like even triggering the drum machine, other sounds you wasn't using to a sampler for a kick.
Yeah.
Triggering another sound from the drum machine for a snare. And it wasn't a drum machine with pads. It was like an 808 with the lights going
with the
by. So how do you find the timing? You have to be really nice with it.
It takes a lot of painstaking patience, right. Man.
So a lot of people could say, yo, I bought Marley this record to do.
But you couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. No.
You could bring me anything and I could be the mastermind and fix it for you. But you could not do it.
Legendize.
And can I also say this?
Chop it up, sample it, loop it, et cetera.
When I did my second album, a lot of times Marley was doing LL sessions. I would bring records and the engineer would do it. I spoke up. Marley gave me co-production.
100%.
So don't get mad because you didn't say nothing. I learned after the first album, hey, look, I didn't make any beat. And I'll say this to this day. But I had a record or two, and Marley would put it together, and he still gave it to me because I had a conversation with him about it as an adult.
Basically,
just because you might have brought Marley the sample and he flipped it the way only he knows how, doesn't mean he's not a great producer. At one point, Marley was doing shit for everyone. So he didn't have the time.
Yeah, I remember you like during that same time we were talking about those beats was made in the bridge, and then everyone's first album from the Juice Crew. You single-handedly produced.
Listen, he ushered in an era of era-ness.
I made like 4 albums in 1 year.
Yeah.
And that
will
it.
Never be matched.
And that was it. I was like, yo, I did what I had to do for y'all.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honest, I was out anyway. I already went to Uptown. So I was out. I was like, yo, see ya. Boom, boom.
I'm saying this because the narration of the story is never being told correctly. Just because you gave a guy a sample idea does not mean you produced the record.
100%.
Right, it's like you went back to, you were talking about your album, your second album, and you were talking about a new Jack Swing sound.
Yeah.
I'm watching an Unsung and Teddy Riley's being interviewed, and he credits Marley for the new Jack Swing.
As he should.
Of course. Because Teddy knows. Should.
People are like, what? What are you talking about? What? How did Marley get in?
Marley knew how to make the stew and then get the right people to put potatoes 100%. And whatever in it.
But there was something called that swing.
Cause I had a little button on my MXR drum machine called swing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like a 16 triplets. Right. And you know, we make a regular beat going boom, bah, boom, boom, bah. And then push that button. It's like
yeah.
It just swing different.
Yeah.
And you know, you did have my swing beat.
I had a joint called My Swing Beat, but Spoonie G Take It Off was a hit in New York.
Now I know I ain't come just to take up space. Because the night is right and the stars are bright. So come on, so sister, while the truth be right, just take it off. I mean everything. Hurry up, pretty mama, so that we can swing. Now I don't smoke,
You actually you did make it before it came out. You made yours before his came out.
Yeah.
His came out first.
His came out first. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. That's like Take the Bait and Eat 'Em Up, L.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the thing about it is that because you did not follow what you were supposed to follow, you can't take away from somebody who has facilitated almost everything that you're a part of.
No doubt. No doubt.
And to be honest, you know, if it wasn't for me, people wouldn't even have a voice right now.
That's the other thing. And that's the other thing.
You wouldn't even have a voice.
That's the other thing. I love this man to death. He's my brother. We disagree half the time. I will never in my life take away the fact that I would not be here if it wasn't for this man.
And if it wasn't for Magic, I wouldn't be here. You know what
I'm saying?
And
that's what it is.
And back in the day, rest in peace, my brother. Magic was an asshole.
He was the worst dude.
He put me in a lot of shit. He put me in a whole lot of shit. But I wouldn't have did it no other way, though.
Because it got us on.
That's what I'm trying to say.
It got us on.
He put you through the BDP.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know.
Magic talked a lot of shit on the air. Well, Magic just talked a lot of shit, period.
What I love about this podcast and to be able to speak my own words is that the history can only be told from the person who lives it.
It's 100%.
Legendize.
Let's talk about projects you got coming out now.
Oh, man. The Fragile Ego.
Okay.
And that is about just interpersonal relationships, how everyone accuses everyone of narcissism, but everyone actually suffers from it because we're in a make sure you're good yourself type of world.
100%.
But people are so sensitive now that they feel like, oh, well, you're not thinking about me, but if I'm not good, then you're not good. So Kali is my DJ on the road. I record all my stuff at his crib, and he don't live far from me. One day he's in the crib and we just chilling watching the football and he's on Instagram and he plays like this D'Angelo remix that's on the Instagram page. And it's this dude named Fruition Beats. He's a 25-year-old kid from Toronto. And I'm like, yo, that's crazy. And then I go home because your phones listen to you. The same thing came up on my phone. So I liked it and he sent me a DM. He was like, I've been following you. I'm a big fan. Just go to my page. I'm listening to the beats, and I pick like 7 beats, and they just spoke to me where I'll say this. The biggest thing that I found out about myself as an artist is my Achilles heel is I'm doing way too much rap about rap.
Explain that. Let's go deep.
The game sucks. Mumble rap sucks. We all know this. But how many times can you talk about it on a project? So with the Fragile Ego, it just made me like, look, I started out as a young artist. Things didn't go the way I was. I have been depressed almost my whole life. Like, really. Like, where it's made me treat people fucked up and everything, man. I've been depressed my whole life. And what I started doing was writing about it. And it's been therapeutic where I'm rapping about what I've been through and how I feel, like real feelings. And like the Fragile Ego was the first start of that. Like it just made me feel like I just want to open up myself to people and let everybody hear because everybody suffers through that, man. On social media, everybody only posting the winning moments. Nobody's posting the bad stuff. You understand what I'm saying?
Talking about artists.
Everybody. So I'm just trying to be real with it. And so we knocked that EP out in like 2 weeks because I have this process where I get the beats first. I write them out. So when I'm in the booth, I don't 2-3 takes tops.
Yeah, get out studio.
And when we started doing the Fragile Ego at Kali Clip, everything sounded like it sounded in my head. But before we started doing that, Kali was just giving me beats. And that was the start of my pen catching on fire for some reason at the start of the year, like the end of last year. And I'm just riding with it because the attention span is bad now. A lot of people don't want the 27-song album.
100%.
So I'm just going to do these little 7-8-song joints with one producer. Everything is cohesive. I mean, selling records is over.
That's real.
Thank God that I could put on a halfway decent show where I could still work. So I figured the more content, the more shows. And that's why I'm doing it. That's it.
What's your favorite one on there?
It's a joint called My Bad, because the EP has a lot of joints where I'm talking about like other people's faults, but My Bad is actually a record where I apologize to everyone for the things that shaped me into the asshole that I became.
Is that the song we have here today?
My hard work brought the same results, left me feeling broken. I wasn't even an adult. 2 years later, now we got a hit. Dropping Science Symphony, the fans were really proud of it. Left one label for the next one, got a large sum of money. Ah, yeah, this is perfection. Time to hit the
studio. Pen has been hot.
Woo!
Yeah, I've been staying on it.
That's what it is, man. Thanks for checking us out. How did you get in touch with you, Craig?
You already know. MC underscore CRAIG underscore G. And you can get at me over there. I holler back at everybody unless you're talking about something ignorant.
All right.
Boom. You've just been legendized.
Legendized. The true stories from day one. I'm sick of hearing everybody tell me about me.
Legendized.
The funny shit. The first time I met Mr. Rob, Mr. Magic was like, yo, I was so excited. He's like, yo, man, I want you to meet my godfather and my godmother, man, Mr. Rob and Mrs. Rob. So he takes me up to the big house. So I'm some skinny kid walking in this house and shit. And I'm walking with Mr. Magic. He takes me in the room. He said, yo, Mr. Rob, man, it's my DJ Marley Marl right there. It's my fucking DJ Marley Marl.
Right?
Yeah, Mr. Rob looked at me, some skinny little boy in his room. He looked up, he looked at Magic and said, I'm going to tell you one thing. You better stop saying his motherfucking name so much on the radio. He gonna take your fucking job.
Oh.
He said that straight to him. He gonna take your fucking job.
Legendized.